three reasons why I do an inventory. And they lay them out specifically why. We've been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and discover the obstacles in our path. And it occurred to me one day, why do I need a new attitude and a new relationship with my Creator? And why do I need to discover the obstacles in the way? Why do I need that new attitude and new relationship with the Creator? Real simple. The old one didn't work. Imagine that. So I need a new attitude, a new relationship with my Creator. And this allows me to be in a position to where I can start the ball rolling in that direction of developing a new attitude and a new relationship because the old one didn't work and discover those obstacles. So, we admitted certain defects. We've ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now, these are about to be cast out. So, say you own this building, and everything in here was yours, but it was all expendable. And someone came in and said, you get rid of all the things that are unfavorable that you'd rather not have, and we'll replace them with new things. What would you throw out? I'd get rid of all these chairs, have some nice recliners, have a nice sound system, so on and so forth. So I do that with my life, and I do that in inventory, and I cast these things out. I'm no longer going to play the game of rearranging the furniture. Because no matter where I put the furniture, it's still going to accumulate dirt. I got to get rid of it. It no longer works. So I'm going to cast these out and get rid of them. And they say, this is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. We think we've done well enough in admitting these things to ourselves. There is doubt about that. In actual practice, we usually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. Many of us thought it necessary to go much further. Self-examination is defeated by one who suffers from self-centeredness. It doesn't work. I need to get out of myself. I need to be real with someone else. That's where another human being comes into play. One of the experiences I had with the fifth step, and I think it was about my eighth or ninth time around, and it says, rightly and naturally, we think well before we choose the person or persons with whom to take this intimate and confidential step. Like anything, I can develop a habit here. And once I have the habit of inventory down and sharing it with another human being, the danger for me is I can kind of play out how it's going to play. Especially if I have done inventory work with this person before and done a fifth step. So I can kind of read them like a book. That can be dangerous. But it says, rightly and naturally, we think well before we choose the person or persons with whom to take this intimate and confidential step. I think it was my eighth or ninth inventory. I did a multiple fifth step with six people. I had some hang-ups with religion at the time. One of them was a Mormon bishop. Four people belonged to different denominations, and two of them didn't. And what was neat about that experience is every one of them saw something different. It was the same inventory, and I did them back and back every 2 hours. I did four one day, and I did three the next. And what it did, it ripped me wide open because my desire at that time was to not have any resistance or any restrictions because I was preparing to go through the steps with someone else, and I wanted to be prepared for that experience. And so that's what I did. And it's right in compliance with what the book says. Now, I did that once. Will I do it again? I don't know. It happened as a result of prayer and meditation. And that was one of the days when I followed directions. I don't always. But I did that day. And it was a great experience. Some people do it with clergy. I've had that experience as well. Just to have a new experience. one of the things I do now, and it's been a habit, I've done it 2 years in a row, and I'm planning on doing it this year as well. For a long time, I didn't take advantage of having a monastery so close in the Ogden area. Well, every January, that's how I start my New Year's. I go there January 1st and spend anywhere from 3 to 5 days. And I do a personal inventory. And the first year I did it, I set up an inventory, set up a fifth step with a monk. Last year I went through the traditions and the concepts and dealt with different issues in my life. And so every year I go there for a renewal and try to get on track starting the new year by doing something like this. So that's what I did 1 year with a clergy, and that was a good experience. I'm not a Catholic, and yeah, it was a good experience. But I have found no one understands me better than another alcoholic. So other than through prayer and meditation where I've done with the clergy and a multiple fifth step and then with a monk, every inventory and every fifth step I've ever done has always been with an alcoholic. With sobriety ranging anywhere from 2 to 37 years. And so it doesn't really matter. Pieces of my inventory I've shared with newcomers. One of the things I was taught, when you take people through the steps, you want to be current in this thing, take them yourself. So when you have a new guy in a four-step, do one with them. My last resentment inventory, there are 3 resentments. That's an improvement. So, you know, so as I carry on doing that, I get to stay current and be in the moment. I don't believe in doing them once a year or every other year. I just believe in doing them when they're necessary, and right now I'm working with a group at my home, and we're starting to go through the steps together, and we made a commitment as a group to do every direction in the book as we come to them. So as we come to an inventory, we'll all do inventory together. And that's what one of the things I was taught here to do, is, you know, as you take others through the steps, do them yourself. So if we cannot or would not rather do this with a clergy, we search our acquaintance for a closed mouth, understanding friend. Fifth step, sacred. What goes on there is between me and God and the individual. It doesn't matter what they've done. You know, this is a couple questions that I've been asked as I've gone through this. What if someone's committed murder and got away with it? What if someone has molested somebody, has done child abuse? Well, it's sacred. It's none of my business. That's what amends is for. However, as a member of society and of the community, if that person persists in that behavior, it's got nothing to do with the fifth step. It's got everything to do with what they are doing presently. And as a citizen, it's my responsibility to notify the authorities. You know, if they're molesting children or anything of that nature. And that has come up. When I've done presentations like this before. And so, you know, I think it's kind of silly because I think the answer is within and we know what we need to do. So if I've done some damage in those areas, I need to amend it. That's all. Now on page 75, here's a bunch more promises. And I've been taught a simple way to remember them, the 7 of 5 on 75. There's 7 fifth step promises on page 75. So we pocket our pride and go to it, eliminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. I'm taking new people through. That's when I shut the book and I said, go to it. And here's the promises. Once we've taken this step, withholding nothing. We are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. Big difference. We start to experience the spiritual life. It's no longer a belief system. It becomes our reality. It becomes our way of life. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. And I'm given a direction. Returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. So I take this book down, I review the first 5 proposals. In quiet time, I pray and meditate and see if there's anything I missed. If there is, I call the person with whom I did this inventory with and let them know. If not, then I proceed on. And what I do and what I teach those that I take through the steps, near the end of your hour, review step 6. If we can answer to our satisfaction that we've been thorough in this 5th step, we look at the 6th step near the end of our quiet hour. We have emphasized willingness is indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can he now take them all, every one? If we still cling to something we will not let go, we ask God to help us be willing. So, near the end of my hour, I'm contemplating this 6th step. Am I willing to let God have it all? If there's something I'm not willing to let him have, I pray for the willingness. And when I have this willingness, I end my hour with the 7th step. 7th step's nothing more than a prayer. When ready, we say something like this. My Creator, I am now willing. You should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. So then we've sealed the deal. There's the amen. The prayer started in the 3rd step. We commenced the spiritual activity. Now it's for more action. So when I take someone through the steps, when they do a 5th step with me, after they're done with their hour, they're in amends. They're writing their amends list. It's already done. I don't work on 6 and 7. How can I do that? I'm powerless. That ain't my job. I believe they're backward steps. I believe they're a result of 8 and 9. 6 and 7 are none of my business. That's God's business. I have the willingness, and I pray that he'll take the good and the bad and do what he will with me. But then it's my job to go about the reparations of the past. And you know, and the book tells me there's a long road of reconstruction ahead. So I cannot shrink at this. I must start amending. So amends, I think, is really quite self-explanatory, and there's just a couple things I'm going to hit. We have a list of all persons we harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We took it. We made it when we took inventory. My experience has been not everyone that I harmed came up in resentment, fear, or conduct. There's some that I was aware of, that I knew I owed an amends, I didn't have a resentment, they didn't come in any of those categories, and yet they're on my amends list. So, that inventory in and of itself isn't all inclusive of every amends I owe. At least that's been my experience. So, I am to attempt to sweep away the debris which is accumulated out of my effort to live on self-will, run the show myself. If I haven't the will to do this, I ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning, we go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. So, am I willing to go to any length? Yeah. And they let me know what that is. One of the purposes of amends is our real purpose, is to fit ourselves to be a maximum service to God and people about us. So, one of the directions I was given, it says, our man's sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. He's going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than in our talk of spiritual discoveries. So, you know, I can go to someone, say I owe them $1,000, and go to them and say, I acknowledge the debt. I'm on a spiritual path now. I found God. Do you think he wants to hear that? I don't think so. But if I go to him and say, hey, I know I've been a belligerent drunk, and I've been a liar and a thief, and I owe this debt. Now, it's going to take me a while to pay you. I can give you $200 today, and I can pay you $50 a month until the debt is paid. Is he going to be more interested in my demonstration than he is in my spiritual discoveries? Absolutely. So I must do something tangible. When I do something tangible, people are more apt to believe me. They probably still have a lot of doubt, especially if I create a lot of damage and did a lot of lying and broke a lot of promises. But I get to change that here through a demonstration. A lot of times we go to talk to people, they could throw us out of their office. It doesn't matter. It says it should not matter, however, if someone does throw us out of his office, we've made our demonstration, done our part. It's water over the dam. That was a difficult one for me to understand for a long time. Not everyone's going to accept the amend you make. Some people might be bitter and never want to see you again. I've had experiences where that has occurred. And so I have to honor their request. I can't go fix it and do it the way I want it. Here's one that happened a few years ago. I was able to work off a debt with someone. They owned some apartments, so I went in and did some drywall repair and painted them. And here's the kind of ego and attitude I have. I go, this isn't fair. He's taking advantage of me. You know, this is way too much to pay, you know. This is way too much of debt to pay. He's taking advantage. He's making money off this. Bah, 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 bah. And then the light went on. Well, look at it this way, idiot. Who didn't pay the debt in the first place? Who milked it out? And, you know, and look at this. He's given you an opportunity to set it square and to be straight with you. You know, so be grateful that you don't get what you deserve. And, you know, and sometimes I can forget that. You know, it's like, for a long time I had the attitude when I went and make an amend, it's like I almost had the expectancy of how it ought to turn out and it ought to be this way, and this is my limitation, what I'm willing to do. And what I've learned over a period of time, it's none of my business. I created the harm, and so what I must do when I approach someone that I've done damage to is admit the wrong and then ask them if there's anything else that I need to set straight and keep my mouth shut. And then when they're done, I ask them, what can I do to set this right? It doesn't matter what I think I ought to do. I must ask them, what can I do to set this straight? So then one of the directions we're given here is before taking drastic action, which might implicate other people, we secure their consent. If we don't get it, say we had a partner and we robbed a bank and got away with it, and you want to go clean it up. And he says, no, what do you do? If we've obtained permission, we consulted others, asked God to help, and the drastic steps indicated we must not shrink. If I can do it in a way where he's not going to be involved in it, I need to do it. If I harmed you, I owe you. It's non-negotiable. My spiritual life is more important than anything else. I may lose my job. I may lose my reputation. I may go to jail. It doesn't matter. If I harmed you, I owe you. And I got to do it. What's more important? Being free or staying in a self-made prison, always looking over my shoulder, looking over my back, thinking someone's going to come to get me for something that I've done. I need to clean it up. If it shows up, I got to deal with it. That's why I continue to inventory my life and continue to do this process. It's just like if you took a body and weighed it down, put it at the bottom of a lake, what would happen over a period of time? Currents would come along, body would start to decompose, and parts of it would start floating to the surface. Well, as that stuff starts to float to the surface in my life, I need to address it. I can't just look the other way and think it's going to float downstream. I need to deal with it. So if it shows up, it's got to be dealt with. And sometimes I'm not sure how to deal with it. That's why I consult with others. That's why I talk to a sponsor or talk to someone who's had the same experience. That's one of the great tools that we have for each other here. And it's in the ninth step promises. We're not afraid of the past, nor do we wish to shut the door on it. Because sooner or later, as we stay here for a while, we run into people or know people who've had similar experiences. Then when we run into someone who we don't know how to deal with the situation they had, we know someone and we can consult with them and hook those two people together, and the one who's free can show the other one how to get free. I think a man's come in different degrees. One of the exercises I learned that really helped me in early sobriety is to get 3x5 cards or 5x7. And I have 4 sets of cards. On the first set, I have the name of the person I harmed. I'm aware of the damage I've done, and I'm willing to make it, and I know where they are. Second set, I'm not willing to make it, and I know where they are. Third set, I'm willing to make it, but I don't know where they are. And the fourth set, I don't know where they are, and I'm not willing to make it. What happens is I start doing the simple ones, the easy ones, I gain strength. I start to get more free because I believe several things happen in a man's. One of them is I'm forgiven for the damage I've done to those individuals when I try to set right the wrongs. But in that process, I'm given power to forgive. And so it becomes easier to deal with the more difficult ones. So as I do the easy ones, it's a practice. It's no different than doing push-ups. First time, I might only do 5, 10. As I continue to do it every day, pretty soon I could be doing 1,000. It's no different with amends. So I start with the simple ones. I start to practice the spiritual guidelines in here. I pray for power and direction and doing the right thing. And as they show up, I pray first and then I go deal with them. And so I'm given strength to do that. And then the promises, and here's something I was taught. Every one of those occurred for me when I was drinking. That was the power of alcohol in my life. It created something very similar to spiritual experience. So I can put in front of every one of those promises when alcohol was working or when it was effective and see how effective it really was in my life and see whether or not that fits for me. I'm not going to do that exercise, but that's one of the ones I do. And it sets me up for the last promise, which truly was the truth for me. We suddenly realized alcohol was doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. That's what I drank. All those other things occurred as well. And so this brings us to step 10. I don't think step 10 is a maintenance step. I don't believe that. First part's just a review. Then there's promises. Really, the 10th step is the last paragraph. That's what it's all about. I'll look at a couple of things. I continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. So, as I'm out amending, start practicing this step and incorporating it in my life. We've entered the world of spirit, so how did I get there? First 9 steps. How did I stay there? I continue to practice and incorporate the first 9 steps in my life. They brought me there. They'll keep me there. But there's things that I must continue to do. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for my lifetime. One day it occurred to me, how can I be more effective in carrying a message? Learn to be an effective listener. So in prayer and meditation, I learned to listen. Then I took it a step further, and every other year I do this, because I still got an ego. I'll take 2 to 3 months where I'll go to meetings 4 or 5 a week and pray that God will speak to me through others. And I won't share for that 2 or 3 months. I will just go there with a specific spiritual exercise of learning to listen. And, you know, and it really helps clear the mess for me. Then I'm not passing judgment on you as bad, because that's where I'll go. And as soon as I start getting there, I know it's time for me to do it again. And, you know, and stay quiet. And it's a good exercise. And so that's how I can learn how to be more effective. In order to be more effective in carrying a message, I must first learn how to be an effective listener. And so another way that I can learn how to be effective is I can continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And you know, and on the other page it says it's easy to let up on a spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We're up for trouble if we do. Alcohol's a subtle foe. What's the program of action? Now the book lays it out for me what it is. At the bottom of the third step, getting right into the fourth step, it says, next we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning. So a spiritual program of actions, 4 through 9. That's where the changes occur. And I find it interesting in the 10th step because they reverse the order. I continue to watch for selfishness and dishonesty. Those are the first two questions in a conduct inventory. So I continue to address my conduct, my resentment, and my fear. I still have 3 inventories. Only now it's not all about resentment, it's about my conduct. And I cannot rest on my laurels. My past achievements will not keep me sober today. Yesterday's work will not keep me sober today. Every day is the day when I must carry the vision, God's will, into all of my activities. Today is the day I surrender. Today is the day I make the commitment. Today is the day I go and get out of myself and do something for someone else. So when these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. So here I have a set of tools. If these crop up, I already know how to use them. I run them through one of those inventories. And when I see the truth, I ask God to remove them. I discuss them with someone immediately. So I go and I fifth step it if necessary. And I make amends quickly if I've harmed anyone, because now it's about being current. It's about being in the moment. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. Here's the 10th step promises. We cease fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. And here's the fulfillment of the 2nd step. For by this time, sanity will have returned. So now I'm starting to experience proportion of the ability to think straight. I'm no longer warped. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we find this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That's the miracle of it. We're not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We haven't even sworn off. Instead, the problem's been removed. Does not exist for us. We're neither cocky nor are we afraid. That's our experience. That's how we react, so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. So those are amazing promises.
I tried and tried in vain to stop drinking, to control drinking, to control the thinking. And then one day, it just happened for me. And as a result of going through the pain and the blood, sweat, and tears of the recovery program and the program of action of 4 through 9, boom, all of a sudden some of those things started to happen. I have not had a conscious thought or desire of a drink since I got here. That was removed right from the gate. Doesn't mean that there hasn't been thoughts. I mean, I had a silly incident occur last year. I mean, it's amazing how my mind works. I didn't act on it, but it's just amazing some of the stuff that'll go through this genius factory. One day I'm driving down the street and I see a liquor store. I get this idea. Why don't you go in the liquor store and check out the prices of your favorite bottles of booze to see how much money you're saving? Now, it's like I started laughing, like, where did that come from? You know, but I didn't act on it. But yet the thought was there. There's a time in my life I would have, and I'd have gone in there and I'd have been mad that everything been jacked up and I could only buy one instead of two. So I'd have gone out of there mad and got drunk. So that's some of the things that go through my mind from time to time. So it is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. It becomes a working part of my life. I continue to inventory my life. Why would I want to just use inventory once to face and be rid of things? Does that mean that all the things are going to go away and never come back again? There's some stuff that's going to come up. So now I have tools. So, you know, it's just like a mechanic. He keeps on, he has all those tools for a reason. Is a screwdriver going to fix everything wrong with the car? No. Is a wrench? No. But the combination of all those tools will maintain that vehicle. And that's what I get to do here. I get to use all these tools to maintain this vehicle, to keep the inner vessel clean and debris free. And some days are better than others. It's just the way it is. So we're not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. So I carry that vision of His will, not mine. So I surrender to that on a daily basis. How can I best serve Thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. And, you know, and that's something I learned here, and that was a shift and change in prayer. It's not so much, what can you do for me? It's, what can I do for you? How can I be helpful and useful to you? Show me what I can do for you. And, you know, and just what a shift, what a change. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It's proper use of the will. I believe this last paragraph is what 10th step's all about. Much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, direction from Him who has all knowledge and power. So that's what this is about. This is about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from Him who has all knowledge and power. So I can turn that statement into a question. If God has all knowledge and power, how much do I have? He's got it all. I don't have any. So I need to go to the power source. If we have carefully followed directions, so if I have done everything from the beginning of this book to this page, here's my checklist. This is what should be occurring in my life. I have begun to sense the flow of His Spirit into me to some extent. We have become God conscious. We have begun to develop this vital sixth sense. So there's 5 senses. The sixth one is God consciousness. I've begun to develop this. But we must go further, and that means more action. So then it's step 11 and 12. And this is what I maintain about those steps. The 10th step is an introduction to God consciousness. If I've carefully followed directions, this is what will occur. That's my introduction. The 11th step is where I develop God consciousness. And the 12th step is where I practice God consciousness. When I work with others, it's absolutely vital and important that I pray for every person I work with, because everyone's different. And yet we're all the same. But I don't know where you're at, and I don't know what you need. So I need to pray, and I need to practice that. And I need to ask God, what do I do with this one? Because I don't know what to do. But He does. And so as I keep my life debris-free, He will demonstrate through me what He can do, and He'll direct me to walk with that person. That's all. And so they give me some guidelines with the 11th step. So when I retire at night, I can carefully review some things. And then upon awakening, and it's not just awakening in the morning, but I'm awakened as a result of these 11 steps, then I have a responsibility to practice all these principles and to carry this to other alcoholics and those in Al-Anon to carry it to others. So I am to carry this message, and I am to be a living demonstration of the power of God in every area of my life. And I'm to demonstrate this, and I am to live it, and I am to practice it. And I like what it says at the bottom of 87. It says, as we go through the day, we pause. When agitated or doubtful, ask for the right thought or action. I like how it says when. It will occur. It doesn't say if. It's going to happen. Just because I have some spiritual experiences and start to experience some changes in my life doesn't mean that my humanness isn't going to come out. Doesn't mean there's not going to be times when I'm agitated. Doesn't mean there's not going to be times when I'm going to be resentful. And you know, and this is, for me, this is an embarrassing one that it's important to share. When my sister died, I was unable to be there for the family. I had a drink. When my father died, I was there for the family as a result of this program and the principles that you have instilled in me and shared with me. I got to be a son, and I got to be a brother, and I got to show up. And December 5th of last year, I was home for my mother's 67th birthday, and I had two unfinished demands that I was aware of. I had a coin collection that I stole from her when I was 14 or 15. I had a very clear memory of it. Only time I really balked with the sponsor. I says, well, I don't know where I'm going to get those coins. And he says, why don't you try a coin shop? Brilliant idea. So I kind of kicked for a while, and you know, but I did it. And you know, and the other thing, I snipped a $20 bill out of her purse for a bag of weed. That was back when it was cheap. But those were just clear in my mind. I was able to be home for her birthday, the first time in 31 years, make those amends, and take her out to dinner. And that was an amazing experience. It was done. There's no unfinished business. And I stayed home for a few weeks, and you know how mothers are. You know, it doesn't matter how old you are, they still treat you like a little kid. At least mine does. So, I was just in one of those bad places where she was pushing my buttons, and I was building a dog pen. She got a couple new puppies. And you know, and I've worked on $2 million homes, and you know, but yet I'm incapable at her house of putting up a little fence. She had to get in the middle of it. I blew up. And I didn't blow up at her. I blew up, packed all my stuff, threw it in my truck, and drove away. Drove 50 miles and called and told her to have a good life and stay out of mine. Drove about another 15 miles, and the thought occurred, why don't you call your sponsor? Oh, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to hear the truth right now. I want to eat this up. And, you know, and in my anger and in my rage, I was blaming her for everything that had happened in my life. And, you know, and I know that's not true, but that was the state of mind I was in. Now I went a little further, and I realized I was being a dumbass. And I needed to go back and be a son. And so I did. And I went back and I apologized and we worked it out. Because you see, when my dad passed away, my mom and my sister said, "We want you to have his truck." That was a direct result of all the amends I've made. I was blown away. Brand new Dodge Ram diesel turbo. I called the sponsor. I says, "I'm overwhelmed. I don't know what to do or say." He says, "Why don't you say thank you and drive your truck home?" So I did. But yet I was willing to walk away from that because of my anger. Because something triggered in me, and here I thought all these amends were done. And, you know, and so I had to look at the truth. Truth is, today I have a good life as a result of Alcoholics Anonymous. And although a lot of that damage has been dealt with, there's still scars. It just takes time to heal. And, you know, and when I left just before Christmas, it was the first time that I really, really felt the love of a mother for her son. And I just broke down on the spot. And I realized that she has never meant to do any harm to me. And she just means well. And, you know, and that was a neat deal. That was a great experience for me. So do I get agitated? Yeah. That's pretty good, though. You know, 100-mile cool-down's a lot better than disappearing for 15 years. That's what I did before. So, you know, that's improvement. We constantly remind ourselves we're no longer running the show. Humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, "Thy will be done." One thing I failed to imagine. Not only did the thought occur not to call my sponsor, but you know what I did to justify the way I was acting? I'll call a sponsee. That seemed like a good idea. Didn't want to hear the truth, but, you know, I'd go justify it with someone who would take my side. No sickness here. So we are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decision. So I no longer have to burn up energy foolishly. We become much more efficient. And in the spiritual life, we don't tire as much. We're given more energy. The more I expend, the more I give out, the more I get back. How that works, I don't know. It just does. So we don't tire so easily, for we're not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. It works. It really does. We alcoholics are undisciplined, so we let God discipline us in this simple way we just outlined. But this is not all. There's action and more action. Faith without works is dead. So a whole chapter is dedicated to the 12th step. And I think there's a whole lot of different facets to the 12th step. But our 12th step, carrying the message to other alcoholics, is nothing more than taking another alcoholic through the steps, showing them what you were shown. That's all. That's the 12th step. That's one part of it. The other is, I am to practice God consciousness. I am to demonstrate these principles in all my affairs. And I'm to live this way. I'm to start to live differently. So I use these tools because things are going to continue to crop up in my life. I'm not perfect. No one among us is. No one's ever done this perfectly. These are spiritual guidelines for living, and they work as we apply them. It tells us that practical experience shows nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with the other alcoholics. Intensive, not casual. It's the best way to get out of my selfishness, is to be with you. Because when I'm with you, I'm not thinking about me. That's a good thing. We don't want to miss out on having a fellowship grow up around us. It's an amazing experience. It's an amazing experience. A couple of years ago, I had a birthday. I celebrated at Valley Camp, and there were 43 people there, and there were only four in that room I hadn't worked with. I just broke down. I've been busy here. I had to go after this thing with the desperation of a drowning man. Because I was drowning. I was dying. And because of you, I have a life today.
One of the guidelines when we work with people, it says it's dependent upon our relationship with God. We've seen men get well whose families have not returned at all, and we've seen others slip when the family came back too soon. And here's a guideline for me as a sponsor. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in this path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us, when we put ourselves in God's hands, were better than anything we could have planned. Follow dictates of a higher power and you'll presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. So there's a big difference between having a sponsor and being sponsored. If someone's being sponsored, that means I walk with them. I walk with my sponsor, and he walks with me. It's not a stranger in my life. It's absolutely important for me to be transparent with another human being. That's one of the things I've learned that I have to do here. I have to be transparent every day. I can't let stuff build up anymore. I've got to be real. I get to do that by being with you. A line I really like in working with others, it says, to be vital, faith must be accompanied by self-sacrifice and unselfish constructive action. That's how I get to grow, by practicing that simple little guideline. It's vital to my faith. It must be accompanied by self-sacrifice and unselfish constructive action. And that's an amazing deal for a selfish person like me to learn to be selfless and to do this for fun and for free and to do it because it's a joy. And you know, and I don't know if this has benefited anyone who's here today. But you know what? It benefited me. And you know, and I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful to each and every one of you for being here this weekend. And I'm grateful for my sobriety and for you being in my life. Thanks for letting me share.